Hey there, this is just me giving a quick thing before we actually start this podcast episode and we have our introductions and everything. I'm just going to let you know right now, we talked for almost 2 hours and this is a cut version. Some stuff was cut out and essentially this is the rundown of what happens. First we have the introduction, then we have a discussion that starts with clowns, then gets into lucid dreaming, and then we go on to talk about fantasy and religious stuff. And then we have some discussion about Apocalypse World, or starts with Apocalypse World, and then we got our break, and then at the end we talk about enthusiasm and energy, followed by games that we want to see, and then we have our close off. So, hope you enjoy this. Enjoy. Thomas Novacell. I started the Google Plus community. Totally should check it out. A guild for creative invention, where it's literally game design, creativity, art, anything essentially goes. Pretty cool discussions happening over there. I have a game coming out in the near future called Runaway Hirelings, about hirelings running out of a dungeon. So, like, what happens when everyone gets to the boss room and then the party TPKs, but the boss monster dies and all that's left are the hirelings? And they have to run away out of it.
Yes, I'm Ole Peder. I'm in Oslo, where it's now 2:45 a.m. And dark. And I like role playing games. And I'm a member of Thomas Creative Invention Intervention.
Creative intervention is the best. I can imagine it now. I've picked up acrylic paints. No, don't do it.
We could dress up like mimes and just intervene in people's.
Yeah, intervene creatively. We dress up like mimes, but we wear like mime colored business suits, so like just stripes. But they're like blazers and stuff, and we have cool hats.
And clown masks and knives.
Oh, no. No.
No, okay.
I'm not gonna. That's a safety concern, but okay. So.
I've been fascinated to read about this scary clown phenomenon that you got going.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm so worried. Like there's a lot of hysteria around it, and at the same time, it's like it's like people are like, oh, it's unreasonable, it's irrational. It's like it's irrational, but like if someone was dressed up as a clown and like whispering from the bushes to take children, I'd be like, how is that irrational? Some guy's trying to lead your kids into the forest.
Strange men, masked strange men, brandishing knives and trying
Yeah.
to lure the children away. Being
Come on, guys.
worried about that is
Come on,
rational.
guys. Everyone knows clowns aren't real. But
Seems
it's
to
not the
be.
clown part I'm worried about. I'm worried about the guy dressing up as a clown trying to like taking people. I mean, like there's a reason why like people wear masks when they go to banks and like movies and stuff have always had like clown masks and clown masks have been used for all kinds of things. I mean, like I don't think it's an irrational fear. It's just like people are already creeped out about clowns generally because I mean
I think that's the tagline for Hollis Mason's book in he was the first night owl in Watchmen. The tagline for the book is sometimes justice has to go masked or
Yeah.
something, or maybe it was something else from Watchmen. But I don't know if these clowns are superheroes. I think they're
I don't think they are. Or if they are, I don't think they're doing a good job of being superheroes.
I think the nightmare clown seems like an apt metaphor for your whole presidential election.
Oh my
It seems to be
God.
haunted as well.
Oh, maybe that's the true secret. The candidates, every candidate in our campaign this year of like any party, I'm not going to be biased towards one or the other. All of them, like at the end, are just gonna take off a mask and be like, "We were in the woods all along," or something ridiculous like that. And it's just been a long, long con.
But activities, adult play activities, you could play my game and Jason's game called Old Friends. It's like a booklet you can buy on drive-through for $6 that will support a good cause. And there are some cards that will give you instructions. And it's quite an intense GM-less LARP. They use a mask to contact the spirits of the dead.
That sounds like it would really fit on Halloween night for adults. I mean, and since you don't have Halloween and you're doing something probably on that date, I'm going to suggest that the day after, that you try to have a sleeping game, because I'm sure you'll be tired.
What's a sleeping game?
It's something I'm making up on the spot. Yeah, so I've been trying to figure out about lucid dreamings and trying to trigger them, and how do you get into those when you're sleeping? And I'm like, I really want to get to it and then just be like, okay, got control of my dream, gonna play a role playing game, just so I can live the role playing game, and just like the D&D scare warned about.
This sounds very interesting, but I've only caught like half of it because of the line thing. But you say you're into lucid dreaming and you want to make a game based on that or using it.
I want to try to figure out how to get the control of dreams, because I mean, like, I'm new to it. I'm trying to figure it out. This has only been going on for like a week or something of me learning about it. But I want to get control of the dream or figure out how to manipulate it and whatever if I can. And I want to just start playing a role-playing game in a dream. And I feel like if you can manipulate the environment, like I've heard people talk about, or even if I can get into like a weird space, I can just pretend that...
A dream is a pretty weird space.
Yeah, they're terrifying sometimes and very trippy. But like, I think it would be really cool and just be like, get into it and like know that I'm into it and just pretend it's a role-playing game while asleep. Like, oh, I'm flying around in space. I'm going to be an astronaut. Whee! And
do you keep a journal?
No, but I'm trying to get in the habit of it. I wrote on my website. Oh, this is a blog post I actually wrote. When I woke up after trying it the first time, I wrote down what I dreamed, because I normally never remember my dreams, but after trying it the first time, I remembered. And man, it was weird.
In my experience, it's easier to remember dreams and also easier to enter lucid states if you keep a journal and try to make a habit of it. You often won't remember much, but you will remember some fragments. Like, and if you start thinking about those fragments, more stuff will often come to you.
Yeah, foot in the door.
And when you have that sort of habit of thinking about dreams, you will, I at least, experienced effects such as dreaming about dreaming or being conscious of dreaming while I was in the dream, which is lucid dreaming, right, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the journal is key. There are some other recommendations as well out there, but I can't remember.
Yeah. So, yeah, goal, get control, run through a dungeon. Or become cloud people. I don't know. And you disappeared.
I often dream about genre related stuff. I once was chasing Dr. Doom through some kind of system of like steam tunnels or corridors or something. And I often also dream about the LARP situation, where it's this odd kind of in-between state where I'm semi-aware that I'm at a LARP and it's stuff going on that couldn't have really happened at a LARP because of, special effects and things. But I think it's something about that the LARP thing that is very... It's not the same kind of liminality, but it's a parallel... There are some parallels to what's going on in your head when you're dreaming. Also with role playing, I think, but with LARP you get the added physicality. So the body maybe remembers more of that when you're dreaming.
Yeah. So, I mean, Fall's an interesting time. I mean, like, I don't, I'm trying to think, like, when I think of, all right, so this is me going towards, like, the traditional fantasy role-playing game. It always feels like there are only two seasons in the world of most fantasy role-playing games, and it's, and one of them is the in-between of summer and fall, like, that little in-between period where the leaves are just starting to change, and it feels like most fantasy worlds are perpetually in that state. It's either that, or it's frigid, freezing winters, where, and it's like, there's no in-between, because I mean, like, I see it all the time. I never see a game take place in, like, spring, like, with fantasy dwarves and gnomes and whatever going around. It's like, oh, it's raining all the time, or, it's always like, oh, sunny, the clouds peaking, the grass is green, and it's like, I'm waiting for there to be a game where it's like, nope, the grass is all still dead, and it's just starting to perk up again because snow crushed the life out of it.
I think we often, in my groups, I'm pretty certain we often forget about the seasons, or just like, what time of year is it? Oh, let's say it's spring for this session, but wasn't it, it gets, yeah, sort of fluid like that. But I think if you take a bit better care, I don't mean you need a calendar or anything, but just take a bit more care to note, like, okay, if it was spring last time, it can be either spring or summer next time, right?
Yeah.
It will help strengthen the illusion. And also just giving small pointers like that. Oh, it's kind of rainy and gray, and the leaves are falling. And...
Yeah, it's those little touches that, it's those little touches that may only have to be, like, two words within the 2 or 3 hours that you play the game, but it sets something up. Yep. And I mean, times and seasons can be used for countless imaginative, I'm trying to think, inspiration. Because, I mean, like, in the U.S. we have calendars that you can get, and they have, like, a holiday for every day of the year, almost. And just by that, or you can look into a culture's traditional holidays or practices and just customs around a certain time of the year, and you can base your... say you have a group of elves that are displaced from the forest because they can't live there anymore. The forest got burned down by something, so now they're displaced people. You can look up some other culture and be like, okay, what do they normally do during this season? Okay, now apply it to the forest. Now, because they normally do it in the forest. Now, how would they still try to continue their cultural practices without having the traditional means that they had it. That's the kind of stuff where it's like, oh, okay, so you're not just doing the someone stole the purse. And I don't normally do that much effort or research, but if I find a hook or something, I'll look into it a little bit, or at least do a quick Google search.
I think both ideas you mentioned are very nice. Both having, not going overboard, not like detailing the 24 most important.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
holidays, but just say staking down, like, okay, these 3 days of the year are particularly important, or maybe they celebrate something every time the moon is full, or whatnot. But also I like the image of the displaced tradition, yeah, like being a tradition or a holiday out of its right element.
Mm-hmm.
Where I guess there are several cultures that like real world cultures that have examples of that. I should think. No, actually, I know, but yeah.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of cultures that have had that kind of thing happen, or that have had to modify their traditions because of either, actually, this is a definite truth, popular opinion, or because changes in environment, or just internal order and organizational problems, like... We're like, say someone, like a culture that has always been based around like a male leadership role, and it switches to a female leadership role. Cultures and traditions will probably be altered or kind of maybe handled differently because of giant shifts in structure and who is implementing or who is essentially paving the path for this stuff. Let's say it's kind of like, okay, big religion decides to change what their core text is about, like their core message. It's no longer we need to convert people. It becomes we need to show the moral values, not to convert, but to present moral values. That's going to change the presentation of your rituals, customs, practices, because you have a different message because someone else is leading the charge, kind of thing. If that makes sense.
It sounds interesting too. I just think if you have clear leadership of a large religion, you might do those changes. But if you try and do changes to a large religion, someone is sure to get burned on a stake.
I mean, like, I'm making it sound like broad changes, but I'm looking more at like, what if a practice isn't necessarily changing? It's just the implementation, or just some of the undertones are like different because of someone else's voice is saying the same words.
That's also an interesting thing to work with fantasy religions or religions in general, is to look at. It's kind of common to have these sort of is shablong a word, or like a blueprint, like a very like idealized versions of religion, where it's like the Dark Lord's religion and the White Knight religion, and
There's always a cult. There's always someone that believes in a bajillion gods. There's always one person that believes in one god. There's someone that believes in an animal god.
what you led me to think about is how in the real world you get many different facets and variations of how you worship one single religion. You can be a Muslim, but you're a Sufi, or you're into like the more mystical approach to your religion or faith. Or maybe you're even with the monastic orders of the European Middle Ages, you had various versions. You had the Franciscans, who were more like took a vow of poverty and went walking, and you had the Benedict what's it called? Benedictines, who were more like landed wealth and maybe even had political power in their region, and so on and so forth. So just working with the different nuances, or showcasing that there can be variation to the one religion, is interesting.
Variation in implementation based on interpretation or what people take away from things. Like, I know a lot of really religious people that look at the Bible, and they all have a favorite thing. They have something that they hold as the higher of, like, the higher value present. And they think like, and it's like, oh, this one person doesn't think the truth is value, but they think devout loyalty is. But oh, this person thinks the truth is the most valuable thing, but that they should be loyal to no one except for the truth. And it's like, okay, you're interpreting things differently, which means that your implementation of the same rules or same practices will reflect your different interpretation.
That whole thing with the textbooks or the tradition isn't strictly consequent. You have variations within I mean, the Bible itself is contradictory, or has a lot of contradictory statements. So you sort of have to, if you're going to believe in that, I guess you have to choose.
What truths do you feel it's one of those, what truths do you think should be weighed more heavily than others? And which truths do you want to believe are truths, and which do you want to believe are lesser truths, kind of thing? Prioritize. So, moving forward, forward. I can't say that I've been actually playing games for a great amount of time. I've been in the same group on Fridays via Google Hangouts for over a year now, and because it was like started last year in like early months of the year, so I want to say like March or May kind of thing.
That's a lot every week.
Yeah, every week. Well, I mean, there's times when like we don't have enough people, or it's like, oh, where are we gonna play? And we're switching gears, and we do a bunch of one shots, and we move to a campaign. I ran a campaign of Apocalypse World using the second edition playtest playbooks earlier this year. And then the last, I think, really campaign that had a conclusion was the guy who originally organized the group, ran Dungeon World for a long time. And, I liked it. I think what's even better is we had some complaints about it, and, we also, about like how certain things were worded. And it's nice to see, like, I didn't give any feedback because it was during the Kickstarter and then after it. And it was cool to see how, now that the new edition is out in digital, at least so far, I was looking through the playbooks now and I was like, oh man, the things that I wanted changed are changed. I'm not the only one who had trouble with this.
I think they seem like they've been very responsive to the community and interested in. I didn't get on board for the Kickstarters, but now I'm kind of curious to see what they've come up with. So I'm looking forward to the when they'll actually put out the book for sale.
Yeah, I think it's for sale in PDF right now, not physical yet. But I know it's in PDF.
I can try harder.
Yeah, it should be on RPG now. I'll give you a link afterwards.
Yeah, great.
But if it's there, I think it's there. If not, it's on Payhip, I know at least. Because, like, I know I downloaded it from both of those sources. But, so it was some cool changes. But, this is leading... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I haven't run that many PBTA games, but I ran an Apocalypse World campaign back in 2011, just a brief thing, five sessions.
Yeah.
And really, I didn't fully internalize all of it because I suck at learning systems, but I think I grasped the core, and a lot of things you can just outsource to the players because you have the playbooks and they can remind you of their moves and things.
There's a lot of, I think it's player narrative control. Like, it changes the balance and the way of, I guess, just narrative control, just balance, just goes change. Like, it changes versus the typical, like, D&D balance, I think, is there's kind of like the Gonzo sandbox that happens, or it's pretty linear. I haven't played a D&D game that wasn't kind of linear because, I mean, hey, you got to prep a counter blocks. And now that's, like, newer editions of D&D. I haven't had anything super great. But whereas, like, well, what are you going to do is a thing that always gets asked that I ask players all the time when I was running. And it was like, what are you going to do? Like, literally, you can go in any direction because the game makes itself around you. It makes itself around the players. It's like a virtual VR helmet, or have you watched Star Trek before?
I know the show. Yeah.
Yeah, they have these things called holodecks,
yeah.
Which is essentially a blank room that generates a virtual reality. But the room has its own confines. But as a person walks around it, the environment is like a bubble following them, so they can walk endlessly, but essentially be in the same place. And I feel like that's how the world and setting is around games that truly give a good narrative control, like balance between players and GM, so that the GM doesn't have to worry about, oh, what am I gonna do? Because like it's just constant reintegration of things that the players hand you. So they create the bubble around themselves as they navigate whichever direction they
Yeah,
want to go to.
I don't know if we'd started recording, but we talked about this phenomenon with the emergent properties of games, so that sort of things that just turn up during the session, and you're like, where did that come from? And it's a perfect fit. And I think this the what Apocalypse World does is it's good at codifying some best practice stuff. And especially this small trick with the pointed questions, the provocative questions, and build on the answers, which is like a very basic sort of improv tool, but it's great for role playing, and I think it's been underused or under communicated a bit in a lot of games I've been in.
And now looking around, yeah, we weren't recording when we were talking about that, but and now like we look everywhere and that kind of stuff is coming up like crazy. And I'm really excited about it, not because it's coming up, but because I'm interested in seeing the developments that will come about because everyone starts using it. So obviously at some point someone will try to innovate, or there is constant people trying to innovate on it. So I'm wondering what what is the next step up from that? Or what is the next thing that can come from this that'll be like, oh my God, why weren't we doing this before? In our games.
I tried to run this space fantasy campaign this spring, and it ran for 4 sessions, and then we had a 3-month break, and then I said, sorry, I'm out of steam for this. I'm not doing anything. But it was a fun run. It was very heavily improv based, and I always thought, oh, this time I'll do some prep, and I never did any prep. I just ad-libbed and built on whatever they had in their character descriptions and what they said at the table. And it worked, but like for the next thing I do, I want some more structure. I want some more scaffolding for the story, because that also has a nice way of building the illusion or making it feel more like a real thing in a way. Because when you know that we're just making this up as we go along, and I don't mean like returning to the grand old game master with his document portfolio of character notes, right? But
Effort.
maybe something in between, or just maybe even learning some stuff from the old GURPS dude, right? Bless his heart.
bless his heart.
I was thinking
Nothing
of an
against GURPS.
actual. I was thinking of an actual guy I knew. So.
Oh, okay. So that's a that's something that I've been thinking about, and it's sometimes we'll see like as you were saying, you were like what we have whenever I run games, I think to myself, oh, I'm gonna put in prep, it's gonna make it so much better, and I feel like that's a lie I tell myself now that I know and I am comfortable with some of these like really good practices such as reintegrating stuff that gets handed to you. And it feels like I now feel spoiled and I sometimes feel lazy, but then I think about it and it's like, well, if I'm trying to give focus on the adventure that these guys are having, I should work with them, not against them, to try to point them in a direction of something else. I should let the action come up about them, 'cause action is everywhere.
I've spent so much time when I first discovered, learned about role-playing games, and got the basic D&D translated to Norwegian. I was like 10, 11, something, and I would sit there and make. I would be fascinated by those, like all the monsters and the dungeon maps you could make, and I would
Gotta
be
use them all.
making the maps, and never playing. I never got around to play because I couldn't really figure out how to when I was 10, how I was supposed to run the game, right? And I think that kind of the feeling that you have to make the whole world, including all the gods and all the cosmology and all the orcs and what different kinds of orcs there are and what the orcs believe in and so on and so forth, before you can just go ahead and play. It's sort of a, it's both a trap and it's a lie and it's a stumbling block. There's a lot of things. The same with
it's
your
a
game.
Guilty pleasure for GMs until you start playing.
Yeah, and same with, we talked about the making of games. Just get a group together and just start playing your game, because you'll learn so much about the world and the system and what works and doesn't, and you'll get new ideas that you can't get in isolation.
Yeah,
that was something Matthias said to me. Like, I don't know, we were half a year into the E3's B thing, and he said like, so when are we playing? I was like, you don't have a game. There's no game here. We just have some notes. Yeah, I know. When are we playing? And we started playing, and it was fun.
Yeah. I think I've heard this, like, talked about a lot, and it's like, all right, you got notes? Notes are good enough. Like, you can make up the rest while you come along. Because people who are listening to this, this was a conversation before we started recording, and it was about game design, how... when you're writing a game, it's good to play it as early as possible, because you'll be both fueled by the games that you're playing, and you're playing your own game, so you're getting highly motivated. You'll get feedback, and you'll just pick up things, and you'll hear something happen, and you'll be like, oh man, that's a great thing that I would not have thought about, because I figured it out while playing it. And that doesn't just apply to game design. It can apply to setting design for a campaign you're running, no matter what game you're playing.
Just going to take this quick moment to say, we're getting a drink quick. And, well, this whole thing came up because of the Guild for Creative Invention, where I started this thing, and now we talk about creative game design stuff, art stuff, podcast stuff. We talk about essentially anything you can create. I mean, just the other day I was talking about fonts, because I just got started into making my own book cover fonts for the games I make. So if you want to join in on the fun, we do weekend game design prompts, and we also have some contests coming up and we have going on. So yeah, join it up. Again, Google Plus community, a Guild for Creative Invention, and let's get back to the conversation we were having.
But what you made me think of was this, actually this interview I heard with Alex Roberts, who does that Backstory podcast. She was
I haven't listened to it, but I've seen leaks.
She was guest on someone else's podcast, and she said something about enthusiasm and the importance of enthusiasm in order to make LARP or role-playing or anything of this nature work. Also, you see it very much with improv. If you do like improv, taking classes or participate in workshops with improv, if someone is being negative or hesitant or making up excuses or refusing to participate or go all in, then it's such a drain on the energy in the whole room, right? It's,
Everyone else will feel that there's a gap in the energy, so they'll try to fill it, or that gap will transfer over, because it's like, it's kind of like going, it's the party pooper syndrome kind of thing,
yeah,
I guess,
yeah.
Where it's like one person drags down the rest of it because they aren't as excited about it. However, at the same time, I know when I play games, and sometimes I play games with random people, I try to be as high energy as possible, which I'm sure you can notice already. I'm pretty high energy. but I try to be high energy, and I try to keep up the positive attitude, because if I do so, there is the greater likelihood that it will transfer over and that everyone else will try to get into a similar groove, or what is their personality or their play equivalent of the groove that I'm trying to have too. If you see that people aren't talking as much, it may be that they don't feel like they have room to talk, or they don't have room to role play. So,
what I'm reminded of now is my friend Lizzie has written here. She wrote for my newspaper, Lizzie Stark. She's been over here for the role playing things, and she wrote an article about advice for Americans in Norway, And one part aspect of that was a strange phenomenon you'll find in Norway, Lizzie writes, is that people will listen to what you say. They will not. They will rarely interrupt you as you're talking. So I would find myself just going on and on and on, waiting for someone to interrupt. And those kind of cultural differences are interesting. Yeah.
So I guess enthusiasm, and then if you see some people aren't as enthusiastic towards the being an active role player, it may be something going on within the group at the moment. So, like, give them the opportunity and transfer over the spotlight. Because, I mean, like, a lot of GM-less games have that kind of, like, coded into it.
And I also think my baseline or my... I'm a fairly, like, critical person. And for large parts of my life, I've been a fairly, I'd say, like, straight up negative person. So, but I try to be aware of that and try to not bring it into the game and try to remind myself the whole, like, the say yes attitude and also being like, oh yeah, we're doing improv. Oh, someone failed. We're clapping, being pumped, and even if, because you can sort of trick yourself into that mindset. Even if you're not having that day, you can approach it with a I don't know, a smile.
Oh, that reminds me. I listened to a panel on that happened, and it was about these two game designers or game guys that were running they were running games for kids who didn't have like great communication or were having emotional problems, I think, and it was like a kind of like an outlet. And it's and something they said, I can't remember where it was. I think I liked it somewhere. So, yeah. But something they said was, giving a good example, or traditional example, your character has a high charisma score, but you're not that great at talking because you're not comfortable at talking. So you got to understand that not everyone has the same standards of play as oneself might. So while I think... I use I, and I talk in the first person all the time, and then transition over to third person, and I will say speeches if given the chance. Other people will say, I tell them about all of the atrocities of that the dwarf slavers have done to the goblin people who just were resurrected, and they just say that, and then it's like, okay, if that is their good, be comfortable that other people have different good values. Like, everyone has different levels of comfort in role-playing. So it's nice to keep that in mind.
You were talking about the players, not the dwarf slavers.
No, not the dwarf slavers. No, the dwarf slavers can go away. I'm just saying, like,
it's a very important. Yeah. I think it's a very important observation and point to give people room to not be silent or just like sit back a bit and take in the game and just listen if that's their groove and if that's their thing. Because I think I can often. Often I just run rounds around the table and just almost go from person to person. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? You are there. This is happening to you. And sort of put players on the spot in order to involve them and in order to give them spotlight and so on. But with some players, I think that they can happily sit and like listen in for a while or maybe just take their little time to reflect on the game or plan where they're what they're gonna do.
Yeah, everyone has different ways of playing, and different personalities, and not everyone's going to be super talking first person or talk with an like it's like accent players that use accents, like they make up accents all the time. It's like sometimes I try and it just turns out so badly, but. It's like not everyone is comfortable doing an accent, so they'll say, and I say this in a thick German accent, or they will assume that you understand that, hey, they only know German on their character sheet, they're only going to say it in German with a thick accent. And it's like, okay, everyone plays differently. And I mean, while...
We
everyone comes to play the same game, everyone plays differently, and that's what's fun. Because, I mean, if I was playing a game only with myself, and there was, like, six Thomases around the table, I feel like I'd get pretty annoyed, because all of them would be talking as long as I talk.
I played we have sort of an equivalent to the Bible Belt here in Norway, which is, like, the far south.
Oh, God.
Tend to be a bit more evangelical and a bit more Christian and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I was playing this session of Draug, which is Mathias' game about Norwegian folklore and the 19th century. And I made a priest character, and I decided that he's going to talk like that, like they do in the south of Norway, for the whole session. And I think Mathias, like, hated me for 2 weeks. And he was so annoyed with this character. He was a very self-righteous priest who started battling all the underworld people we met and so on.
Fighting demons! Alright, so I think we should move on to the last topic that I came up with. That way we can kind of, like, slide. Because, I mean, like, man, we love those tangents. Because I think that's half the fun, is, like, where it takes us. But where discussions go. So the last one that I came up with was what type of games we would like to see made at some point that maybe, I guess based on our discussion so far, what type of games do you want to see? What do we want to see come out of all the stuff that's going on around us? And, like, I mean, and if you can tie it into fall or masks or pumpkins and stuff, I guess so much the better. I want to see, personally, I already said this before, I want to see what comes next after the kind of like the codification of some best practices stuff that's been going on lately, and the really low prep and just changing the power dynamic at the table. I want to see what happens after that, or like, what is the next, how come we were never doing this before, or where it's like, oh man, it's even easier to play now, great, never, now I, before I didn't do any prep, now I don't read anything, and it's like, eventually it just plays itself, but I'm curious what the next stage is, so I want to see the game that has the next stage.
Next level, yeah, I don't know what that would be.
Me neither. That's why I want to see it. is there any games you want to see made?
Yeah, I've been working on. I've had this title for a game. I think it's a freeform or maybe a LARP. I had the title in my head for 2 or 3 years. I started typing it up for the Golden Cobra, but I didn't finish. So I finished like half.
I was gonna do Golden Cobra, then I didn't.
Yeah, but that's not the title. The title of the game is "Everybody Gets to Play Satan," and that's all. That's mostly what I got. It's the point, or one main purpose of the game is that every participant will have the opportunity to play Satan.
Like the kind where it's on the shoulder kind of thing, whispering into your head, or.
That would be, like, what I was sort of working with the Golden Cobra thing is it would be, you're all colleagues, you're all at some kind of kickoff seminar, job seminar, you've traveled to go get to know each other, team building, and so on and so forth. But as part of prep, everyone can get a personal Satan, that is another character who's also a human being and a real person, but he is a Satan in your life. And I've also thought that Satan can have various aspects, or you can interpret this archetype many different ways, like as the tempter, as the liberator, as the tormentor. Yeah. As
Satan is different for everyone, and everyone has that one person in their life where they're like, ugh!
That was the idea here. But I've also discussed with a friend to make it more like a sitcom where you have these incarnations of Satan. You can imagine like Seinfeld or Friends or one of those, except that it's all just populated by various
incarnations of this.
Yeah. So that's a game I should make sometime, I guess.
Now there's another game I want to see made, and this comes up with the idea of emergent setting, and it's a and I'm thinking like a game about passing notes, but all the notes are pre-written, and that's the game part. And it's like everyone gets notes, and they have to choose which ones they give to another player after a conversation happens. So, like, you have your scene, and then afterwards, there is an exchange of notes. But everyone has multiple notes in their hand, so it's like, you don't know if, like, they chose that one because it means the most, or because it's the closest they could get, and it, like, that impacts the progression of play. And I feel like that would be a great way, if you make kind of, like, those...
The notes work sort of like prompts, or they're reintegrated
into
this, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Or because I mean, it'll impact role playing because it's like telling someone an opinion, and the rules would be like, don't read it out loud. You can't share it. Once you're given the note, read it and then put it into your hand or put it on the table, whatever. Don't use it again. But it's kind of like those pointed questions, but it would be more pointed or vague but applicable statements. So like like how fortune cookie statements are. Where it's like, of course that's true, and you can suddenly start filling in the blanks, like, good luck will find you today. Well, good luck finds everyone pretty much every day. It depends on how you view the world. Like, finding a penny on the ground heads up is good luck. And it's like, oh, that's good luck. Another person would be like, hey, I got a free donut, because they had to get rid of the donut in the donut shop. Good luck. It's like... stuff that happened, and they'd be vague, they'd be almost like fill-in-the-blank questions, but without the blanks, because you would fill in the words based on just what you're thinking at the time. And I think that'd be a good way if there could be some way to merge that into being at the end of the scene, essentially like a final word that's unsaid, but only visible to the other player you present your note to. That'll impact the play of the next scene because if those characters meet up again, because they'll start talking and they'll be like, hey, what's going on? Because it'll impact it. But if you have details in it, yeah. Trying to push that emerging thing so it's as little effort as possible to play.
Yeah. This sounds like a cool kind of tool that you can use in various ways. And then also, if for some reason reminded me of, it's not that related, but it reminded me of a game I finally got around to play a couple of months ago called, and now I think it's called 183. It's just a deck of cards, but it's a role-playing game, or it's a free-form game, and it gives you instructions. It's made by Sarah Williamson and Jason Stewart. And it's you're both play clairvoyance. You can see the future, both of you, but one of the characters can see the future that is really going to happen, and the other one sees alternate futures, and they become a couple, and they have some troubles, and it's, I think the tie-in is the way you sort of, it's kind of scripted, but also very free, I found it was a really pleasant play experience with the right co-player, and I think also Josh T. Jordan, who you mentioned, he has another game that is inspired by some kind of theater method, which is also kind of scripted. It's called It's Cloudy and Rainy or something. It's sort of a conversation between two, I'm certain it's on his webpage, the Ginger Goat.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that down there once when this goes up.
That is also quite scripted, as I recall, and I think that kind of, maybe that could be the new hotness. More scripted games, or more they're not choose your own adventure, but it's.
It gives you a box to play within, and some clear direction, but it's kind of like pointed questions. Like, it proposes that these things are true. Now expand upon it, and
I mean, that's a cool thing to have. Because, like, it's like, yeah, I mean, maybe that is something. I mean, it's coming up all the time, I think. I mean, I'm seeing it more and more, people asking questions, kind of like how in, I think it was Bonds in Dungeon World, and I can't think of any other games at the moment, because I know there are tons of them, but where it's like, blank does not love you, or blank can't trust you now, kind of thing, where it supposes something, and it relationship statements, it kind of thing, but maybe more so towards the mechanic side, like getting more scripted questions or pointed statements that propose that XYZ is true. Now, what's next? What do you add to it? So more framework.
I wonder if you could do like a whole scenario that was built up mainly in that manner of sort of small prompts or sort of script. I'm sure someone, probably Jason Morningstar, has already done this, but
probably Jason's still done so much.
It's still a good idea.
Yeah. No.
Also, I'd like to see a game about contemporary occultists who do real magic in the magical traditions of the real world that is not a chewing gum mage, and it's not quite Unknown Armies, though that was closer. And maybe you could make it inspired by Alan Moore's book that will be out next year or something, where he tells us everything about magic.
Yeah,
that would be cool.
Yeah, so more grounded in realism, more believable kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
like you could believe that it would be happening around the corner of the street kind of thing.
Exactly. I bought like 2 or 3 editions of Mage back in the day, and I was always disappointed. And I have the same feeling about the whole, even though I kind of like the virtual adepts, but now in the new version, I don't even get to play a virtual adept, so I don't see the point. Yeah. It's the same thing for me with the whole Hellblazer comic book that it's sort of like the core character, the British working class occultist who looks a bit like Sting and chain smokes. I love that. I think it appeals to me in a very it appeals to my inner 15-year-old that yeah. I was when I first encountered John Constantine. But the execution of the comics is rarely it's just like, oh, it's a big demon and he has horns and he like hell is an actual place with flames, and I don't. I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, hell could be just in a skyscraper somewhere. Who knows? It could be, and I mean, like, personal hells. I mean, there's so many interpretations that have not been explored of things, and a lot of people follow the same routes, and it's like, gosh dang, there was one thing that came up in the Google Plus community, the Guild for Creative Invention. And it was, I was asking about fairies, and I essentially, and my first comment, I was like, oh my God, this is great. What if fairies are just like life tax collectors? So like, or loan, whatever, budgeters. And so when someone is born, they're given a lease on life. And the reason people die is because they, after a while, they notice that you have failed to pay any payments on your lease on life. So, and the basis of it is like, okay, the fairies are natural in that they are a natural part of the world because they are the reason, they are the people that look after these loans and leases on life. And it's like, okay, you can't break that. You have, like, if you want to continue living, you have to pay. But if you don't know they exist, because, hey, they're fairies kind of thing, how are you going to know what your bill is until you're dead? It just happens. And I was like, imagining it, like, they're up in their office tower, and they're just sitting there, and they're, like, looking over papers, and they're like, man, these guys, no one is paying. But they also get, like, kind of tricky, like, They're like, oh, this person's going to get a life-threatening illness as a warning notice that they need to pay up. But so weird interpretations of stuff. I like weird interpretations of stuff.
I think with the this kind of stuff, like the occult or the magical or supernatural, I think I'm more interested in the corner of your eye stuff, it could have been my imagination, or this is just too many coincidences to be a coincidence, right? It all fits mm-hmm. in too well. That kind of atmosphere I find interesting.
It does not seem that probable that all these events would happen in this manner. Or like the things that you see when you're a kid and you look in the dark kind of stuff.
And I think that was the origin of a lot of these fairy tale creatures, at least the ones I know from Norwegian folklore would be.
Yeah, it's explanation of the unknown and experience, right?
It's pitch dark, you don't have a flashlight, maybe you forgot your torch, and it's some vague moonlight. Maybe the moon is half, so you can only see like silhouettes and shadows around you in the pitch dark forest. And it's very easy for your mind to start, like your very primal mind that is primed to notice dangers and creatures out in the forest and actual animals and things, right? To start imagining things. I also think some of it has been, or maybe started as, explanations for people who were different, like people who had some disorder or some kind of abnormality about them.
Or even if they just kept to themselves, that's seen as strange. Why would you just do that?
It's obviously because she's a witch, right?
Yeah. She has to keep her secret. That's why she doesn't stay around us, because at night she turns into an ogre, or he turns into a goblin. I like to talk about goblins.
Or it could be an expression, in some cases, it's a quite obvious expression of bad conscience. Like with, we have one creature called the Utburd, which is basically... Is the ghost of a child who was left in the forest to die, and it acts in a very specific, strange, and creepy manner. It tries to jump on your back and have you carry it into like Christian soil for a proper burial, or maybe even to, I don't know, do something else. And it can turn into all sorts of creatures and make a lot of noise. And I love the way this 16th century imagination is just run wild on the basis of this horrible tradition that they had, right? It's sort of how dreams work. We talked about dream. Were we recording when we talked about the dreams?
Yes, we were, because we were talking about game design stuff, and what game are you gonna play? Kind of. Yeah, we were talking about that. We were talking about the dreams.
I remember the fragment. I slept a bit after work, and I remembered a fragment from that dream. I was walking. There was something about a tarpaulin that was green, and it was some kind of world in there, or something, some kind of place you could go within there. And I was talking to an elderly lady in the dream, and I gently placed my hand on her back and said, "Like, are you sure you'll find your way through the land inside?" I asked her, and she turns to me and says, "Like, of course, dear." She smiles. "I know exactly what it looks like. Just like the inside of your head." So I don't know what
that means. I saw that post.
Yeah, and it's
I was like, "Whoa, that's creepy."
It's a bit creepy, but it's also, that's what I love about dreams. It's so unpredictable and highly personal, private and very weird symbolism.
Yeah, it's literally already in your head. It's gotten inside your head.
So it's something to do with the aesthetics, I've never been too concerned with, like, the... Some dreams I think you can interpret, and it's fairly obvious that it's about, you know...
Yeah.
Well, I have a stress dream about the job. Okay, maybe there's stress on your in your workplace. Yes. but some of it is more... I don't know. I don't think there's an exact facet. Is that a word? Like,
I guess it. There's maybe interpretation.
Yeah, like the exact explanation isn't necessarily there. But
I actually have right next to my desk, and I have 10,000 Dreams Interpreted, which is a dictionary of dreams by Gustavus Hinman Miller.
He sounds and like he knows what he's talking about.
There are some treats. This guy died in 1929.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. And
that's the right time.
Dreaming of moles is... To dream of moles indicates secret enemies. To dream of catching a mole, you will overcome any opposition and ride to prominence. monks, monkeys, monsters, money, nursing, oars. Like, I'm trying to think of, like... To dream of handling oars portends disappointments for you, inasmuch as you will sacrifice your own pleasure for the comfort of others. To lose an oar denotes vain efforts to carry out design satisfactory. And I'm trying to think, like, how do you jump from that, from, like, like, he was rowing a boat on a pleasant lake.
He was a scientist, man. He researched that shit.
I'm sure. But it's like, when I think of my dreams, I look at them at face value, and I'm like, it was an experience, and I should not try to look for inner meaning to it, because then I will be flavoring the experience based on my own interpretation. It's kind of like when you, when someone tells a story that you've told them, they will. It's the game of telephone. It'll get altered a little bit by me trying to look for interpretation. There doesn't have to be interpretation in it. There doesn't have to be a reason for it. I mean, stuff happens for no reason all the time. Like, I mean, or it can be perceived to happen for no reason. I don't want to know the reason behind my dreams, and I try to think that if I try to put reason behind some of them, yeah, I will lose the enjoyment of remembering those dreams.
I used to be, when I was keeping a journal, I was curious why people didn't talk more about their dreams. It seemed like this is something we do a few hours every night. Isn't it, why aren't you more interested? And I think one major explanation is it's private and sometimes a bit scary and
sometimes embarrassing.
And embarrassing, yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's an inner thought. Why some people don't like some of the inner thoughts they have.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I shouldn't have thought that about that microphone looking all shiny and But, like, I will talk about dreams until the dogs go home. But sometimes I don't want to interpret them. I just like to talk about the dreams themselves. Like, I don't need to find meaning, but I do like trying to twist them and try to describe them differently. Like, I don't know. I'll have to give you a link to link to what I wrote before. But
you know what? So, you know what Freud said about if you dream about a microphone, what it means?
What?
He said that means you want to do a podcast.
Oh, that makes so much sense. I thought it was going to be something much grosser. Freud.
Good old Freud. Anyways, yeah.
Any closing comments before we wrap this up?
I love stuff like this. I think it's a great thing you're doing with a little creative invention community. And best of luck with running the Hirelings. And,
I'm going to wish you luck with Festival. And I'm curious what you end up playing. If you play anything new, like, if you'll find one more enjoyable.
First up is this Grenselandet thing here in Oslo. And I'm you can count on me to be posting...
telling us all about it.
Yeah, with pictures and everything.
Yeah. Okay. So this was first podcast. I'm gonna be trying to have more of these. They're pretty impromptu. So if you're one of the members of the community or you're someone just listening and you want to talk, I'm going to be in pretty much all of them unless someone else starts recording them too and giving them to me and in secret envelopes. But so, and there'll be random topics and maybe there will be a schedule for a set one if people want to do it. But so, yeah, anyone's able to come in and talk if they want to. So just check it out. So this was Thomas Novacell and it was super fun. And who else was here?
Ole Peder Jæver.
I cannot pronounce that.
No one can.
I always think your name is Ollie.
but it's a hard name even for many Norwegians. They can't like by just looking at the surname, they can't figure out the pronunciation. And if I go abroad, even if I go to Denmark, people can't figure it out. So you're in good company with the rest of the world.
No one knows how to spell my last name at Banks, so yeah, that's it, guys. All right, we'll talk again in the future. Yep, wrap.